Good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming up. I hope everyone got their steps in on the way up here. We asked for a room as far away from the keynote as possible, and everyone delivered, which was great. My name is Tom Keane. I run Azure Government. I'm very excited to be here in DC this morning talking about some of the things that we've been building and what we're up to. Really, for the next 65, 70 minutes, we're going to talk a lot about the investments that we're making in government. And I feel really excited about what we're doing as a team. We're putting out a lot of functionality, and really we are investing big in however you look at it. And hopefully you'll see that over the next 70 minutes as we walk through this presentation. We've got a lot of new functionality we want to walk through. There's a lot of work we're doing around data and visualization of big data. And there's also a lot of work that we're doing around cognitive services. So our goal today is to spend a lot of time showing you demos of how this works. This is not vaporware, this is real tech that you can try out when you leave here today, and you can get it working in minutes, and it's really, really cool stuff. We'll also just talk about where we stand across the board with some of the investments that we announced last October, so things like Marketplace, the work we're doing to expand our infrastructure, and adding new capabilities. We're going to do a lot of demos today as we walk through all of this. Up front, ahead of this event, I asked the team to go and work out how much functionality we've added in the last 90 days, and we've really been pretty busy. We've been on a pretty steady clip. I think a year ago when I talked to customers here in DC, we'd get the feedback, hey, there's a certain functionality missing in Azure Gov, there's a feature I need. We've worked really, really hard to close that gap, and now the feedback I actually get is, wow, you guys are actually releasing a little bit too fast. There's too much functionality there, which is a nice problem to have. But you know, the key thing I want to emphasize is our view is just because you're sitting in a government environment or you're doing higher levels of compliance, that doesn't mean you shouldn't have the full set of functionality that a commercial customer can have. So our goal is that 100% of what you can have in a public environment, you can have inside Azure Government. And we'll be walking through a lot of examples of where we've closed that gap today during this session. Up front, I thought I'd just talk about some of the work we're doing in our physical environment. When we first started, we started with two environments, one in Virginia and one in Iowa, which is where we've built out our government environment. That's been very, very successful. We've continued to grow. Generally, when I look at any growth metric for Azure Government, we continue to see triple-digit growth on a high base. So we really are growing very aggressively, be it customers, be it the amount of storage they have, the amount of compute cores, databases, we're seeing really, really strong growth. We've been continuing to expand our Direct Connect infrastructure. So today you can connect into Azure Government with ExpressRoute from AT&T, Level 3, Verizon, Equinix. We've continued to add those points around the United States. We went live with a connection point in California, in Silicon Valley. And you'll see us very shortly go live with a connection point in Seattle. Coming up in a couple of weeks. You'll also see in the April timeframe that we'll enter preview with our two new data center regions in Texas, in San Antonio, and in Arizona in Phoenix. So wherever your customers are located around the United States, whatever your disaster recovery posture is, we have a significant amount of capacity that we're making available to government customers, and we're exposing that as quickly as we can. On top of that, both of those locations will offer further ExpressRoute points, so you can connect into our infrastructure directly. And this is really differentiated for us in that our ExpressRoute infrastructure, this is using dedicated fiber upon which just government traffic is flowing. This is not commingled traffic with public customers, this is just government tenancies that's flowing across this fiber. And then, of course, if you work with the DoD, we have a set of places where we connect into DoD caps, and we'll be continuing to grow this number as well. So we've got a couple live today. We'll have a third one live later this year. So however you're working, be it with FedCiv, with SLG, with DoD agencies, we're really investing very, very large in our infrastructure across the United States. Building on this, I thought I'd just show a couple of visuals. This is one of our new data centers in Iowa. This is our DC 2015 architecture. This is a four region location. We've got our networks hubs in here and our RNGs, which we're building. These are 48-foot Caterpillar diesel generators in the middle. And really, the scale and scope of the investment that we're making in across Microsoft is unprecedented. So when we look at somewhere like San Antonio, where Azure Government is expanding right now, this is an aerial shot we took just last month in Texas. And when you look at the scale of this, it's pretty incredible. These are small cars down here. And this is really the level of growth that we're seeing across our cloud infrastructure, not just in the United States, but globally. And the interesting thing about where is this growth coming from? It's coming from restricted industry. So it's coming from government, financial services, healthcare, the places that have traditionally held out on cloud. But as we break down some of these barriers in compliance and security and transparency, we're really starting to see these industries move to cloud, which is fueling the growth that we're seeing in places like San Antonio. On the compliance front, Julia talked about this in the keynote. We have 53 accreditations today across Azure. When you look at government, we have really worked hard to close all of those gaps. CJIS, you've heard extensively. We've covered two-thirds of the U.S. population with the states that we have. When you look at FedRAMP, we've, of course, got FedRAMP moderate, FedRAMP high. We've got TIC connectivity support. And you'll see us make more announcements in the DoD space later this week. So, of course, got DoD L4 and L5 today. You'll see us continue to expand that. The thing that we think is really interesting about what we're doing with FedRAMP is that we're not just doing a checkbox exercise. Our view is whatever app you want to build using whatever services you want to build should be fully FedRAMP compliant. So we have 32 services today in our FedRAMP package, and literally we are growing this every single month. So the set of services we have available today, you can guarantee that 30 days from now that number will continue to go up. And we really think that that's something that differentiates us and takes the burden out of you as a customer or as a partner or as an ISV building applications. You don't need to worry about, will I be using something that potentially is or is not FedRAMP compliant? One of the other things that we're doing, and we'll talk about it following our defense, is we're making it easier for you as well. So just like we have in FedRAMP, we've achieved DoD Level 5 compliance. What's exciting about this is, for anyone that knows DoD standards, this is a physically isolated region. So you can use all of the same capabilities, all the same code, the same apps that run on top of Azure Government, and then if you need to meet DoD L5 requirements, either for Azure or for Office, you can, of course, run them inside this region. In January, we got the L5 accreditation. We've seen a lot of pickup from across the DoD, from agencies, from partners. And you can, of course, connect into this environment using the DoD cap, if that's what you need to do. You can also operate in this environment disconnected from the internet. So there's a lot of functionality and a lot of investment that we've made to make this environment robust for you. Now, of course, as I mentioned, I've talked about compliance and all of the things that we're doing. But for you, if you're building an application, you're moving an application over to the cloud, there are, of course, things that you are responsible for. And one of the things that we've been investing a lot of time in is a program we call Blueprint. The intent of Blueprint is to allow you to focus on security or building apps or serving a mission, as opposed to worrying about compliance. So we're doing the heavy lifting for you so that you don't need to worry about compliance. I thought it'd be useful to give an example up front. So when we take something like FedRAMP Moderate, of course, I do a lot of work on FedRAMP Moderate. You've seen that. But if you're putting an application on top of Azure, there are obligations that you need to meet. So what the FedRAMP Moderate Blueprint allows you to do is we give you a set of pre-populated documentation. And you can see with IaaS and PaaS, we can actually reduce that burden on you significantly. And what you'll see also released very shortly is a set of templates. So if you need to deploy an application on top of Azure, we have a standard three-tier set of templates that you can use to deploy FedRAMP-compliant IaaS VM images or SQL Server images. And this is an area we're investing really significantly because our goal is to make our cloud easy to use, to take the burden off you for compliance so that you can focus on the things you want to do. Of course, I'm sitting here talking about FedRAMP, but you'll also see us expanding Blueprint, and we already have, into a whole number of vertical industries. We've got Blueprint available today for DoD apps. We have it for CGIS applications in state and local government, healthcare, financial services. You'll also see us release some new blueprints in places like energy and critical infrastructure. So as you are building scenarios on top of Azure, our goal is that it's as easy for you to deploy a virtual machine as it is for you to meet your compliance obligations. So we've talked about infrastructure, we've talked about compliance. Those are things that in a cloud world, my goal is to take care of them for you so that you don't need to worry about them, so that you can focus on cool technology and doing cool things. One of the things that we're really excited about putting into preview today is a capability we call cognitive services. The idea of cognitive services is that we have a set of APIs, there's 17 in total, that allow you to work with knowledge, to work with images and text and voice, to handle scenarios like translation or image recognition. The original genesis of this technology actually came out of Microsoft building a search engine. So as we built Bing and we built all of the technology that allowed us to search for images and search the web and translate content, we built a set of cognitive capabilities. Further, as we built them into things like Office 365 and Skype, we have the ability where in Skype you can now speak to someone in another language in real time. That's built on top of Azure Cognitive Services. So we're entering preview with these capabilities today, and we're going to walk you through a couple of the different scenarios, and then we'll show you some demos of how they work. So one of the first ones that we're enabling is an API that allows you to look at images and recognize emotion. So the emotion API takes an image in, and then it returns a set of confidence attributes that are built on top of a deep neural network. So what that means in plain language is that the network or the algorithm gets smarter as you use it and evaluate it. So it's a self-learning algorithm. So you can then rate the results of it, and then next time it will be smarter, so you don't need to interact with it as much. So what I thought I'd do is show you a simple demo. So this is my son, this is Charlie, this is a picture I actually took last week. I was on vacation. We got Charlie an ice cream. So I put Charlie into the emotion API. You'll see it recognized his face there, despite the fact that he's got a big ice cream in front of it. And then what it returned back was a neural network analysis of that image and the emotion on his face. So you can see here in our JSON response that it's 99% sure that Charlie is happy. I can assure you that Charlie likes ice cream, and this is pretty accurate. And you can see there that 0.001 that he's sad, so it's pretty accurate. So this is a really simple example. This is real working code. This took me about 2 minutes to do, right? This is not something that takes 12 weeks, that takes consultants, that takes new hardware. This is real simple, easy working code. So pretty straightforward example there, analyzing emotion. Now if we build on top of that and we take something like computer vision, so I want to be able to take that image and I want to be able to recognize objects that are inside of it, see what's going on, are there people in there? Are there objects that I can recognize and then train that model? So I want to be able to distill information from this. So we take that same image, we then analyze it. This time you can see Charlie, it's come back, male, 3. He's actually 3.5, so that's pretty good. The algorithm's working pretty well there. And then what you'll also see here is that we've got some additional tags back. So for example, Charlie's sitting in a restaurant, so there's a window in the background. You can see that there's 88% probability that he's eating. That's pretty good. He's holding the ice cream. I'm not sure if he'd actually touched it at this point. That there's a person with almost 100% confidence, and a whole set of other attributes that I can then use inside my app. So once again, this is super easy to do. This is simply a JSON response that I'm getting back, and I can then start to analyze. Another example, face. I can then take that same imagery and get back the positions of the face. I can look at the color of the hair. Does the person have glasses on? Is the person smiling? What angle is their head on? There's a whole set of richness that we're enabling across these APIs. And so far, I've simply just talked about 3 of them. There's 17 in total. We're making them available inside the government environment. We've got those 3 available today. And I can really do some incredible things. What I can also do with these things is I can start to use the translation and voice capabilities. So for example, I can take an input of text in another language, and I can then translate that into English or into another language of my choice. I can take in voice or video. I can use the same capabilities to analyze that image. I can also use those same capabilities to detect a particular language and translate that video into English. So when you start to put all of these scenarios together, you get some very, very powerful capabilities that you can use inside your app that take you away from writing code or from having people do boring work of looking at long videos to find things of interest or image recognition and really enable some very powerful scenarios. So like I said, this is real working code. So what I'm going to do is have Steve come up and walk you through a couple of demos so that you can just see in real time how easy this is to do and how powerful it is to enable it and get it working.
Okay, so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to take you through a series of demos that show live demos of the technologies that Tom has been referring to. The first one I'm going to show is the Face API. Now here you can see it's just hooked into my webcam. And I'm just going to take a picture of that, and you can see it actually points the individual points on the face, where are the corners of the eyes, where is the corner of the mouth and the nose. It takes all these points and it can do recognition on this. It gives an age estimate, which I kind of like right there. In addition, let me grab a picture. So I'm going to come over here and grab this picture of Donald Trump's family. Okay, and just like that, you can see it plotted the face. I mean, that made a real-time call of the API that Tom was just mentioning. And for all of the faces in that picture, however many there are, a dozen, it went and plotted the points for every face, sent back the payload real time, and displayed them on the screen with age estimates for each one. Now, in addition to that, you might notice that there's a couple of people that have more than just an age estimate. You see Donald Trump right here, Jared Kushner up here. So a couple people, it actually did facial recognition. So how did that work? What I can do is come over here to the face identification setup, and I have a face group called government. And I can set certain people up, so I created a person called Donald Trump, and I was able to upload a series of pictures that enabled me to train the API. So in this case, you know, this is literally just people that are known entities from the government, and here's Jared Kushner. This could be a database of criminals or suspects, whatever the case may be. But the point is that you get to train the API so that it can do the facial recognition. Of course, the more pictures you give of a certain person, the higher the accuracy will be. Okay? Now, that's a quick example of the Face API. Another example I want to show is the Vision API. So I'm going to once again select a couple photos here. And let's start with this one first. Okay, so we can see, because we're humans, we can look at this picture immediately and see it's a park or there's a bench. But what's interesting is just in a few milliseconds, we went out to the API and it actually was able to identify what it was seeing in that picture. This is an outdoor area. There's shade, 19%. There's a tree, 100%. This is a park. It's able to pick out those images from the picture. Let's do another one. So we have a train station here. It's analyzing, and just like that, it comes back. Let's again look at the results. We can see it's a train station, metal, subway, track, platform, and it's able to identify those real time. Let's do one final one. Now, these are not simple pictures. I mean, these are busy, these are complicated pictures with lots going on, and yet, despite that, the API is able to quickly go out and find the relevant items that are in that picture. It's a crowded city, you know, sidewalk with people walking along the street, lots of traffic, it's outdoors. Those are the types of things, just in milliseconds, the API can go and identify. All right? Okay, so that is the Vision API. A couple more APIs I want to show for cognitive services. One is the translation API. So what I have here is Chinese text. It's actually the book, The Art of War. And I want to translate this to English. So I have over here this document translator, and I'm going to select this document right here. And what I want you to watch is when I hit the go, I want you to watch this area right under here. Because right here you see that's just one file that's sitting here. But I'm going to go ahead and click the go button. And just like that, you can see a second file has now appeared. And you see that second file has the .en extension for English. So it's translating that document. And if I go and look at this document, you can see there it is now translated to English. So however many thousands of words that is, we were able to go and translate that using Cognitive Services Translation API, again, just in a matter of seconds. Now we're going to revisit this Chinese translation in a later demo, but one final demo I want to show for Cognitive Services is also real-time speech translation. So I'm going to come over here to this app right here, and you can see that we can set the languages. So the from language is English, because that's a language I speak, and we can set any destination language. Right here, it's currently set to Spanish. I can change that. So I'm going to click the start button. Hello, how are you today? And you can see it did that real-time translation. Let me hit stop. Let me go ahead and select a different language. Let's say we select Russian. Hello, how are you today? And you can see we got the Russian translation just by selecting the language, and we can get those real-time translations.
And the thing I want to emphasize here, this is real working code. To put it in perspective, I was on vacation last week. I didn't prepare for this session ahead of time. I started doing it on the weekend. So I emailed Steve. I'm like, hey, we should demo cognitive services. This was Friday night, about 10 p.m. And then I think I added some more demos as I was on the flight here yesterday. So like, literally, this is minutes of work to get this functionality up and running. This doesn't require consultants. It doesn't require you to be an expert. It truly is easy stuff to highlight and get working. So what I wanted to do was sort of build on Cognitive. So this is a capability that you can try and preview today inside Azure Government. Yeah, so the question was, have we tried voice-to-speech and speech-to-voice? Absolutely. So the great thing about being in Azure at Microsoft is this technology we're actually using to power a whole set of scenarios. So if you take Skype and the capabilities that we've enabled in Skype to allow you to speak in another language in real time to someone else, that's where this tech came from, and that's what we use it for in real scenarios every day. So we've got literally millions of people using it. And what's powering this is a neural net. So whenever on a Microsoft website you rate something, you get an opportunity for stars. You know, how was that translation? 5 stars. What that's then doing is it's making the neural net smarter. So by each of us training it, just like you saw Steve training that picture to recognize Donald Trump or Jared Kushner, when you rate a translation, that's also training the model. And at Microsoft, we've been doing a lot of work to make these models very, very rich and very, very deep. Now, you couldn't do this on-premise because you simply don't have enough computing power to be able to train that model. In the cloud, I've got elastic infinite capacity. So I can use my off cycles of Azure Gov when all is quiet, and I can then go down and train that model into deep, deep depths, hundreds of nodes deep inside of it. So yeah, we're doing a lot of work to train that. The other thing that's really interesting, I'll just add on that, is when we look at voice to speech, there is straightforward translation. You just saw, hey, how are you? That translates. We don't all speak like that. We use slang. And there's a lot of scenarios, a lot of mission scenarios where slang is quite common. So you can actually train the model with slang, with other recognition, so that it then recognizes, well, I might not say, hey, how are you? We might be friends. We might have a language of our own, so we can actually train that into the model. Yep. Yeah, so the comment was healthcare, absolutely. You know, my wife's a doctor, and half of what she says I don't understand. I could absolutely use this to help me understand what she's saying about a medical scenario. Yeah, absolutely. So building on top of that, I wanted to talk about big data. So one of the things that we're announcing today is the availability of HD Insight inside Azure Government. HD Insight is Microsoft's Hadoop variant. This runs on top of Azure on Linux infrastructure. So this is not a port of Hadoop onto Windows. This is native Hadoop running on top of Linux infrastructure in the Azure environment. This integrates in with Azure Blob Storage. So as you upload lots of data into this store, it's available, it's queryable. This is FedRAMP compliant today. So as you go and need to think about compliance, we've already got you covered there. And on top of this, you can use all of the same infrastructure that you're already familiar with. So if you're using Hadoop today and you're writing Spark, you can use that. And then as you need to scale out and elastically use more nodes or more capabilities, HD Insight takes care of that for you automatically on top of Azure. So what I thought I'd do is let's tie back to Steve and the demo he was just showing and show you what HDI looks like in real time so you can get a perspective of what it looks like.
Okay, so what I want to do is let's stick with this example where I just translated this Chinese document, The Art of War, to English. And here's the document right here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to upload this to Azure Blob Storage, specifically Blob Storage on Government. And here it is right here. You can see there's the artofwar.txt, and it's in this blob, these nested blob containers, HDI samples, and then the Art of War. And this is the Azure Storage Explorer, which now works on Azure Gov, so I like to show it because not everyone has seen it. It's a handy tool, especially if you're using it on Azure Gov. Now let me flip over here. Here's the Azure Government portal, and to prove it to you, you should always see this Microsoft Azure Government title right here, and then you can also see it's portal.azure.us, not .com. And I'm gonna click HD Insight Cluster. And here's my HD Insight Cluster right here. And when I click on it, I can see, all right, I can see the URL here, Michelotti HDI Tech Summit. I can click on my cluster dashboards, and I can open a Jupyter Notebook. And one other thing I wanna point out here, let me head back, scroll back, is this is actually running Spark 2.0 on Linux. So this is open source software running in the Azure Government Cloud, specifically on this Linux cluster. So I just clicked the button for cluster dashboards, and I'm gonna click the button for Jupyter Notebooks, and I can open my Jupyter Notebooks right here. Now I already have a notebook for The Art of War, and here it is open right here. I won't take you through every line of code here, but I do want to point out the relevant pieces here. This first line here, this is the location of that text file that I just showed you that's sitting in Azure Government Blob Storage. And what we're going to do is just some very simple text analysis on this document to get basic word counts. What words occur more than other words in this document? So we just have a quick little function to clean out the text. And we'll just split on the space so we can get all the words. And we will get the counts right here. So X plus Y, every time we see a word, we increment the count by one. And then right here, I'm getting the top results by saying, give me the results that have occurred at least 10 times. So if a word doesn't occur 10 times, let's just ignore it. Then I create a schema that has two columns. One column is the word, and the second column is the count. So how many times this word has occurred. And then finally at the end, I create a table called top word results that is populated from this data and has the schema of two columns. Let me prove that to you by just running a quick SQL statement. We'll say select star from top word results. And we'll say where count is greater than 50. And let's do order by count descending. And let's execute that. And no typos, so here's my word counts. I can see it in tabular form. I can also click over here and see a nice little pie chart, which is a nice visualization. But the main point here is we've just gone in a matter of minutes, most of which time was spent with me talking, going from a Chinese document to now we've used HD Insight, open source software on Azure Gov, to parse out that document and get word counts for what words are occurring most often in the document.
Absolutely, and the great thing there is all of this code is up on either GitHub or we've got a video of this demo available, so you can go back and you can try it straight away. So you don't need to have to learn a new language, you can literally download samples and get running today. So of course, okay, we're now using big data, We've got that up and running. You've seen a pretty good demo of that. Let's talk about how we can now start to visualize this. So one of the other capabilities that we're announcing today is the availability of Power BI inside Azure Government. Power BI is a great tool. I run a large team of engineers. I use Power BI every day to see what's going on inside my team and what's going on inside my business. So this is an easy way to visualize using whatever tools make sense to you, be it email, be it Excel, be it a web-based dashboard to see what's going on. And there's a whole rich set of capabilities that you can use inside Power BI to create new models. So for example, I use Power BI in Excel sometimes. I'll use it to slice and dice data that I want to see views on so that I can say, show my management what's going on with the Azure Government business. How many new customers do I have? What are they doing? I also have a set of interactive reports so that there are pre-populated reports that I can make available to people on my team or people I work with to see what's going on. And of course, there are a whole set of really rich controls. There are heat maps, spider graphs, charts. All of these things make it really easy for you to create the right visualization that makes sense for what's going on. So let's flip back to Steve and take a look. Here's an Excel example. We're going to take a look at a web example. So we'll flip back over to Steve.
Okay, so here I am in the government cloud version of Power BI. And you can see the URL is a little different. I always like to prove that to everyone. Look, yes, we are using Azure Government here. And what I want to do is I want to take that data that I just sliced and diced in HD Insight and bring that into Power BI. So we're going to come down here for the databases and import. And we have this Spark on Azure HD Insight right here. And we'll say connect. And it's going to ask me for a URL. So I don't want to always remember that. So I'm going to go over here back to the Azure Gov portal and copy that URL right there and paste it in there. Let me take off the HTTPS part and click Next. Now it's asking me for my username and password. Okay, and this will take a few seconds. This might take 10 or 20 seconds to connect because this is the real demo, not vaporware. We're actually going out and getting the data here. So it's going to connect, and you can see right here we have our tile for Spark. So I'm going to click this. And you're going to see right over here on the right, we have our top word results. That's that table that I created in HD Insight. And there's the count column, and there's the word column that we saw displayed in that grid when I did the SQL query in HD Insight. Now, you know, we could show this in a grid, but we want to show a little bit of a cooler visualization. So I'm going to import a custom visualization. And I have this saved on my machine, the Word Cloud custom visualization here. Let's drop that on right here. And let's select both of these columns, count and word. And let's make this a little bit bigger here. You can see it a little bit easier. So it's going to spin a little bit. So it's going to import that data and needs to figure out how to display these words in the Word Cloud. And when it's displaying, you're going to see a couple things. First off, the words that we're seeing the most are words like the and of and to, and these are filler words that really aren't very meaningful to us. So we can come over here and we can use the stop words and set the default stop words to on to filter all those words out. And when we do that, now we get the words that are much more relevant. And we can, well, there's some other customizations, like do we want to rotate the text, yes or no? So that's no text rotation. This is with text rotation on. But we can clearly see now the word enemy is the word that appears more than any other word in the book, The Art of War. So this is just a quick example of how, again, in minutes, we've gone from this Chinese document, Cognitive Services, to translate that document to English, HD Insight, to slice and dice that data, do some quick text analytics, and then finally putting the pieces together with Power BI so we can get some visualizations of that data.
Thanks, Steve. So we're super excited about all of this tech coming into government. I mean, as you can see, this is real stuff that you can get working today. Was there a question?
Is that level
5 as well,
available Power BI?
The Power BI today is L4, and we plan to make it available in L5. Matt Rathbun's the compliance guy who can tell you exactly when it will happen. Yeah.
Desktop version for Power BI for government versus like the more commercial?
So there was a question, is there a separate desktop version of Power BI? So Power BI has a desktop app. You can download it from Microsoft.com. Is there a different one for Gov? The answer is no, there's not. The same one works.
So if you had GovCloud, OpenAI, Gov area?
Yeah, it can connect in. Yeah. What's that? Is it FedRAMP?
Section 508.
Oh, 508? The question is it 508 VPAT compliant? I don't know the answer.
Should be.
We will double check for you. If it's not, our plan is to make it available. So our goal is everything will be VPAT 508 compliant, CJIS, FedRAMP, DISA level 5. So anything like that, do send us the feedback because we are able to respond really, really quickly to this. Yeah. Yeah, now that I think about it, the feedback was like most government sites need to be 508 compliant. I'm pretty sure we investigated this and the answer was yes, but I should just double check that for you. So I wanted to just also give a couple of other updates on things that are going on across our government environment. One is Marketplace. This was something we announced in October of last year. Since then, we've been on a bit of a tear. We've now got 180 capabilities inside Marketplace. This is literally growing every single day. So based on whatever it is you want to be doing, we have that capability in Marketplace or we're adding it. So we've got different service product offerings. When we look at all of our third-party offerings, we've got things like Cisco, Esri, if you're doing mapping, Bitnami, a whole set of capabilities. And we continue to add in new technology and new partners almost every week. So if you want a virtual firewall running on top of Azure Government, you can get that today from the Marketplace. If you want to run Red Hat Linux, you can get that from the Marketplace. And we're really excited about the work that we're doing here and adding new ISVs, and you'll see more and more capabilities come out this year in Marketplace. Another great one that I wanted to highlight, Azure Resource Manager is a way of programmatically interacting with Azure. So if you want to be writing code instead of using the UI, you want to be automating common tasks, you can, of course, generate that code, that ARM template from the portal, so you can have a starting point. Or alternatively, you can just write from scratch. We now have a set of ARM providers covering all of the major functionality. For example, you want to automate your backup and recovery functionality. You can use that today via ARM with the resource providers for backup and site recovery. We've made those available. And there's a whole bunch of functionality that we're also adding in places like support, as well as all of the other areas you'd expect, like key management, media services, compute, storage, and networking. So this is a place we've really doubled down, and we're pretty pleased with the progress we're making. Another one that I wanted to announce that we've put into preview this week is Cool Storage. So if you have blob storage that you want to be archiving that's potentially significant in size that you don't access all of the time, we refer to that as Cool Storage. It uses the same blob APIs that you can use, and it's then appropriately priced to allow you to store very large amounts of data. So for example, if you're archiving log files or you're archiving video or imagery, you can use the Cool Storage blob API and interact that with that today. So that's something we've made available in preview. That's today in our Virginia regions, and then you'll see us make that available in Arizona and Texas as they come online in the April timeframe. So this has been a hotly requested capability, so we're pretty excited to make it available when you can email there on the line. Yeah. The question is Azure Files. Azure Files are there today, and they work great. And then as Steve pointed out, you can use the Storage Explorer on Azure Government to use with Azure Files. So if you want to go and upload your favorite, 4 petabyte video or whatever, you can put that into Azure Files. So we're pretty excited about Cool Storage. What I also wanted to do is just give you a preview of some of the things coming in the next 90 days. We've got a couple of major functionalities that we're adding. One is IoT. When you look at large volume data ingest scenarios, IoT is an absolutely compelling one, be it predictive maintenance, be it factory floor scenarios. IoT is an area we're seeing immense pickup on across the Azure cloud, and we think we've got some pretty differentiated tech. So you'll see IoT Hub, the first of those capabilities, coming to Azure Government in May. Just like everything else we've talked about, that will be fully compliant with all of our respective government, defense, state, and local government standards. And literally, one of the use cases that we talk a lot about today is Rolls-Royce and how they're using it for engine predictive maintenance across their aircraft fleet. That's literally a real-life Rolls-Royce engine there, and it's about four stories high. So IoT Hub is one of the capabilities that we're enabling. Another capability that's coming that's super interesting to a lot of government scenarios is our GPU series. So this is the N-series compute. So today we have, of course, our standard commodity virtual machines. We have SSD-based virtual machines. We have our G-series virtual machines, which are scale-up for very, very large scale-up scenarios with 256 gig of RAM. The next one that's coming is our N-series. So this allows you to use a GPU chip to analyze imagery that's coming in. So if you think about some of those cognitive scenarios where we're showing image processing, you can now start to process images and videos and other high graphic scenarios at very, very, very fast speed. So this is specialized hardware. It's been immensely popular across our commercial customers, across our government customers globally, and that's coming in the next 90 days into Azure Government. So you know, when you tie that together, this is a scenario I like a lot. This is actually drone imagery, analyzing power lines. And in this particular case, you'll see we're using cognitive services to do image recognition of parts of the high voltage power lines. We're then using the GPU chip to actually analyze and recognize those objects in real time while the aircraft is still flying. So I can then start to do some pretty amazing capabilities building on all of the technology that we've described today. So this is real life stuff. This is not made up stuff. That's absolutely possible on top of Azure Government. So that was a quick session. We jammed through a whole bunch of content. I would highly encourage you to take a look at our website. We've been making a lot of progress there to make that better, as well as the documentation. We blog extensively. We blog typically at least once a day of all the new capabilities, so sign up to the blog if you haven't. If you don't have a trial, hit us up. We'll give you one straight away. Documentation is an area we're putting a lot of time into. So thank you very much for coming and appreciate the time.